Welcome to Five After Midnight. It's a new show where we talk about the things the way you would around a sleep-deprived kitchen table. When you've run five or more calls after midnight, your brain feels half gone, and you and your crew have absolutely no filter. Just pure honesty. The goal of this series is to kick around the small things that really aren't so small and have a big impact in the way our firehouses function. My name is Stephanie. I'm genuinely not an expert at anything. I'm just here to ask the sometimes awkward questions. Enjoy. Come too far, don't let this slip away. Fade out like they said we would. Well, good afternoon, Scott. Thank you for coming off shift and having this conversation with me. I am joined today by Scott Hewitt from Multiple Calls Podcasts. I think everybody has probably caught at least one story from them at some time or other. They're fantastic about putting out just the mind jogger of the day, the things that make you stop and think, not just about being a firefighter, although you guys do that so well, but you put out so much holistic stuff about just being a better human being and species as a whole. So first off, thank you for that. And second off, thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure. It's a real privilege. I appreciate you asking me.
I don't know about privilege. There are no snacks provided.
Yeah, that's for me to judge.
So you and I were actually talking right before we hit the record button. Well, what do we want to say today? We just came off shift, both of us, and we were talking about the mental fog and being tired and having to function as an adult on all of that. And you took it down a great little road. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the oddity of being a sleep-deprived human being with our brains in a very bizarre place for 24 to 48 hours, and then having to come off shift and be an entirely different human being with different responsibilities and different relationships.
Yeah, there's definitely degrees to that. I didn't have the most taxing shift, but I think regardless of whether you are run off your feet or, you know, you had a few calls here and there, there still is some residue, you know, some effect from being at work and then coming home. And I'm always in awe of the crews. And I know in some of the states that do 48s and 96s, I'm really not sure about how you'd probably be able to get me some more insight on that. I'm not sure how everybody copes with that, but
I have no insight. I don't know how they do that.
Oh, okay. So you're just as in awe as I am.
Yeah. I mean, I've worked 48s and 60s, but I haven't been functional.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, there's definitely a need. I mean, if you can, you're always trying to find a way to rest, right? If you not all of us can schedule that into our days, to plan for the next day to, you know, put in 2 hours or, you know, even a short nap. That would be beneficial, but I think we'd be remiss to never think about it and to never do it. So you kind of do that where you can. But there are a lot of days where things are going on that you can't reschedule, or, you know, things of high value that you were really looking forward to, like this conversation. So like I said, before we started, we absolutely could have rescheduled the day. You would have had no issue and vice versa. But there, you know, this was a high value thing in my day. So, what we were talking about is just trying to, okay, get yourself together and focus for a little bit here and get your brain in a gear where you can actually converse and then do your best. Maybe that's what it's about. Maybe it's about expectations being realistic when you come off shift, that you are going to be doing things through your day, but just have some realistic expectations of yourself. And then maybe there's that communication with the people that are in your life that are going to be around you the following day, that they have proper expectations of you as well. So maybe there's a bit of give and take personally and with the people that are around you.
I think as a parent, I have two young boys, they're 12 and 9. One of the biggest regrets I have is how much of their life I have spent in a brain fog. And how many moments I've missed with them when they've come running up and wanted to do things. And it's just, you know, you got your ass kicked the night before. And hey, sorry guys, we can't necessarily go outside and do that big thing. Mommy's tired. And that, especially now that they're getting older and they're probably not going to like me for a whole lot longer. We're entering teen years. That's been a big regret. So how do we, you said it, have conversations with our loved ones and temper expectations? How do we set that up for the people around us who that's not the norm that they're growing up with and being raised with, whether it be your significant other, your kids, your parents, your friends? That's not their reality. We're in a world of, you know, our 20 closest people, 10 closest people, we're the one person in there with our reality. How do we do that? Putting you on the spot completely.
I think we can start by giving ourselves a bit of perspective where there are a lot of people that work night shift, right? There are a lot of people that work nights every night. So there's that we're not the only people and or parents that are dealing with sleep deprivation. So if we can start there, then we maybe can alleviate a bit of that guilt and maybe blame on our specific job. There are a lot of jobs out there, a lot of people that work nights and are day sleepers. And for them to try and fit time in with their kids, it may be even more difficult. So a bit of perspective always helps. Expectations are always best when they're realistic. And then with kids, you can't always have full understanding or, again, expectations of them fully understanding what being exhausted is and being, you know, not being able to function fully. But I think they can feel if you're doing your best. And I think they can feel if you have that good intent of giving them quality time. So it wouldn't necessarily have to be, if you had the full day, it wouldn't necessarily have to be every minute of every day. I mean, there are times on vacation that where you are spending every minute of every day with them and solely focusing on them, but that's not, for most of us, that's not a reality. So maybe it just is about carving out quality time in that day and wholly focusing on you and them and your relationship. And I think they're going to feel that, and you're going to feel that. So again, I think that's realistically achievable. And if we're really going to believe in, and I believe it, that the quantity of time is important, but quality of time is most important. And, you know, we all know how powerful, you know, a few focused hours on something or someone that we really love can be. So maybe we, again, don't have to have that unrealistic expectation and beat ourselves down, which makes us feel even worse. So maybe we can have that be a little bit of a uplifting piece when we're not facing the ideal that we would wish we had.
Give ourselves a little bit more grace with it. I wonder,
yeah,
are we kind of also our own worst enemies in that, listen, stupid, you know you don't get sleep. Why would you schedule this? And obviously life doesn't always work out this way, but if you have the option, don't schedule that big thing on an in-between day, or give yourself a day after shift to recover before a full huge day around people, whatever it is. I think we have this immortality complex where we're like, screw it, I do it on duty. I can run a code exhausted or a fire exhausted. I can go live life exhausted, but it's different. You don't have that robot mode when you're off duty with your family in any way, shape, or form. So maybe we need to start admitting a little bit more mortality in that and saying, no, I have to be in this certain space to be a good partner, a good parent, a good friend, a good whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, not everybody always has a choice, but if you do, then that would be an effort to make. I think things always look great on paper, like you're making your schedule for the month and you're going, oh, I can go from that to that, that won't be a problem. Or you're hoping to have an easier shift.
The call gods will make it.
Doesn't always work out that way.
Yeah, the call gods will make it a problem.
Yeah, I'm sure. Like, again, that's something that's just consistent across all countries that do emergency service work, right? I'm sure we've all had that comment or thought in that early morning call or that we've been up all night and we'd say, oh, it's always when you have something planned the next day.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess statistically, we kind of always have something planned the next day. So that's going to happen more often if you don't legitimately have nothing planned for the following day. So it's not always realistic for people to have choice of downtime. There could be financial reasons. You could be working towards, additional schooling, and that schedule has to be maintained. There could be, special events, obviously, with your kids. So there's not always choice, but maybe what we're talking about here is instead of dismissing it completely, like, oh, it'll never happen and you never think about it, maybe just the fact that you're thinking about it, and if you're able to make it happen a couple times in a week, that's going to be a lot better than nothing.
I think one of the worst things that I've been realizing lately is how much I need to take better accountability for my sleep factor. And I'm really discovering the more time I spend on the job, the closer I get to retirement, the more I'm very begrudging about going to bed on time. Be it staying up later and hanging out with people off duty because I know next fall I'll be retired, or the night before going on shift. I got 2 quiet hours to myself with no kids or whatever. I don't want to go to bed at 9 o'clock or even 10 o'clock when I should. I want to stay up and have this time to myself. And I think we're the worst about that and getting even more worse as I get older and just not having the culpability. And my point with that is, I think something I've realized is how much we need solo days as emergency service providers, personnel, whatever you want to call us. We need like entire days by ourselves sometimes, I think, to be a little selfish and do either absolutely nothing or go do whatever it is that we want. And that's something that we don't talk about, I think, because there's a certain amount of guilt of, well, I'm already gone for this many days a month. I can't explain to my family that I want an entire day of doing nothing or of being gone. But I think that's so paramount to, we spend our time taking care of our family and then the people that we serve. I need an entire day to just take care of no one, except for the DoorDash guy. Make sure he gets a good tip. But that's it.
Yeah, perhaps that is what's unique to our work, is that you, and if you're doing it well, that you are, not at every job are you expending emotional energy of caring for people at the same level. So there are jobs where you can just go in and you do your work and you can go home, and there may be interactions with people, but you're not, in that caring, compassionate mode. Like emergency services or healthcare, mental health. So obviously, there's a lot of industries other than ours that do it. So I guess we could find, if we can't schedule solo days, like a full day. I think those 2 hours are important that you talk about at night. Maybe there's a give and take there, where sometimes it's worth it and sometimes it's not. I guess you just don't want to feel like you always go from high speed to shut down and then back on to high speed again.
Mm.
I think we can all do that at work most of the time, and we can do it sometimes at home. I think when it catches up to us is when we are doing it all the time, right? So maybe it's okay to have a few days in a row like that, but you're not going to be able to maintain that for 5 days. So maybe looking at your schedule that way, right, in a little bit more realistic terms. And then if you carve out that time, or if you do find yourself having time, even if you're driving, right? I know driving obviously should take some attention, but you are kind of an autopilot. If you're lucky enough, I guess you could look at it as being lucky enough to have a commute, even though it's not always, I'm just thinking of mine. I don't want to always think that it's a lucky thing. If you're stuck in traffic for that entire time, it's not necessarily a nice thing to do.
If you live right outside of Washington, D.C., it's not a good thing.
Right, yeah. So again, I'm trying to put this in terms of like not just thinking about my life and then translate that to what everyone should do. But you could have, where I'm going with it is you could actually designate that as quiet time, right? You don't always have to be, whatever time it is, it's not driving, it's using that as an example. Like maybe I can, in my life, while I'm driving, I don't always have to have something on in the background. I don't always have to have a podcast or music or something. I can just have quiet time and let my brain start to decompress. So maybe if, even if I'm not going to be getting a nap that day, I'm recovering some sleep, at least I've de-stimulated or decreased the stimulation to my brain. And maybe that's going to have some benefit. So maybe it's about carving that time out properly and structuring it. If you're around the house and you've got a few hours or an hour, then maybe just have it in complete silence, right? If you're going to go for a walk or walk your dog, you don't always have to have music in your headphones or be on the phone with a phone call. Maybe that's about protecting that time and making it quiet time. Even times when you are actively doing something, it's almost like they call them active recovery days for working out, right? Where your body's a bit taxed and you shouldn't be doing another massive leg day, but you want to do some movement. So you do some mobility, you do some like light yoga. So you still are doing something and moving things, which is beneficial, but you're also not, you know, expecting your body to take that incredible amount of stress day after day after day. So I think that's when it adds up. And you're right, over a career, right? How can you avoid it when it's going to be 20 to 30 years, but maybe that's what makes it even more important to try and get these hours here and there over time, because it does really add up.
Yeah, but with our personalities, there's something you said about, you know, when I'm in the car, I don't need to always have something on, a noise in the background. You think that with our personalities, we almost do, because we've made chaos and noise such a baseline that we're almost uncomfortable in the silence of our own thoughts sometimes. I know that's contradictory to what I just said of having an alone day, but the funny thing is so when I have that alone day, there's going to be plenty of stimulation. I'm going to have the TV on. I'm going to be scrolling through my phone. I don't know what I would do with an alone day if I was told to just do something silent or quiet or peaceful. Even my alone time wouldn't be peaceful. You think that's a problem we have? We need constant stimulation and chaos of some underlying level?
Your distraction, right? Distraction is sometimes the reason, or maybe it's company, even though maybe you're surrounded by people all the time and you just want to, yeah, have that familiarity. Maybe even there, like I find even with podcasts, right, you get into the habits of listening to ones. Like, I'm not trying to detract anybody from listening to the podcast, of course. It's kind of productive to what we do. But you do get in the habit. I get in, I put this on, I drive home, right? So some of it's habit, some of it's comfort. Some of it is you want to feel like you're always making the best use of your time. So there's always this personal growth piece where that's a heavy push where you always need to be improving now. So you're trying to make best use of that time. So it's about restructuring what you classify as best use of that time. I think seeing your brain the same way you see, you know, your physical body helps, right? You can't be at the gym, you know, at least I can't. I couldn't be doing, you know, CrossFit style workouts every single day. And my body just can't take it. So
nobody's body
can. We need
to
see our brains. Yes, we need to see our brains the same way that your brain needs rest too. And then you don't need to take it to an extreme. You don't need to be A, sleeping, or B, meditating during that time. It can just be changing that one piece, like I was saying about if you're around the house and you're just doing, you have to clean up, you got to unload the dishwasher, whatever you have to do, just try doing it in complete silence. You know, try driving in complete silence. It's really hard these days to find silence. So you don't need to be sitting still and wholly focusing on it, but I've found there's benefit to silence in times when you can choose to not have noise. That really helps.
I don't know if I could actually do that.
Well, try 5 minutes and see how it goes. Just like meditation, right? It's all these things. They're just habits. So you might do it and you might find that, oh, that's actually really nice, right? That actually really helped. I guess that is that awareness piece where you have to pay attention. You have to pay attention to intentionally doing it when you're starting, and then you have to sort of have awareness of how you feel afterwards, and then trying that over many days, and sort of keeping a mental log of that about, is it beneficial when I do that? So then you're more apt to want to do it more often, right? Just like going to the gym.
Something else you and I, maybe about a month ago, we kicked around was how it's funny. We think of ourselves as our own niche little culture in the fire service, but the fire service culture is really just the culture of the rest of the world with its own little niche terms. And it, especially in America, for those who might not know you, Europe and Canada, our politics and our politicians lately over the past couple of years have very much influenced how we interact with each other as humans and our aggression levels and our mm-hmm. manners. You know, Americans are very well known for their manners, unlike you Canadians. But it really is. We think we're so special, and we think we're our own environment, but we're not.
I think we're a lot more similar than we are different, even in politics. And I think that's just a result of media and access to information. It's exactly the same for us as it is for you. So you do have to kind of curate what you're choosing to expose yourself to. And maybe that whole head in the sand idea, if you want to just completely shut off and never, ever watch the news and never, ever pay attention, maybe you don't want to go to that extreme, but you also don't need to be plugged in and connected and knowing everything about everything all the time either. So it's about finding that amount that you're able to engage with.
Well,
and then again, it's about it.
Go
about
ahead.
Attention to how once you, just like the way you eat, right? It's about paying attention to the way that when you consume that stuff, how it affects you mentally and physically, and maybe how you then interact with people because of it. And then, like we started off talking about, after shift, we're obviously a lot more sensitive and easily, I don't want to use the word triggered because that's kind of a loaded word now, but you're a little bit more raw. And so that'd be an important piece to recognize that, okay, these feelings I'm having when I'm driving home, I'm already feeling a little bit raw. When I go into interacting with people today, this is how I'm going to be a little more sensitive and reactive. So let's remind ourselves that that's why that's happening. And it's not necessarily the people that you're interacting with. Or, they are, maybe people are being irritating, but you're experiencing it at a level that's even more amplified because you're sensitive. So yeah, maybe sensitivity is a good word for it, right? We just have to recognize how sensitive we are to things. And then I keep going back to giving ourselves a bit of grace and a bit of a break and each other too around the hall. And I know you speak about it as much as you can, that we don't need to avoid conversations, and especially we don't have to avoid difficult conversations, but maybe we pick and choose when those happen and how we're going to show up for them. And we don't always need to meet people at the same energy level and attitude either. So if someone is coming in a bit hot or highly opinionated, that doesn't mean we need to meet them at that level. There's ways to interact in a more tactful way. And that's not only going to lead to a better conversation, but it's also going to protect your peace a little bit too.
Do you think we need to have conversations that, hey, we have to have a higher accountability level than Johnny Q Public? So Johnny Q Public can get on the internet and argue and fight with each other, or they can do it in the parking lot at the grocery store. And I'm sorry, but it is a more aggressive nature between strangers than it was when I was growing up. It truly has changed and become more acceptable. Do you think maybe we should have more conversations of, this is the environment we're living in. We don't get to do that in the firehouse. Do you think it needs to be a hard and fast rule that we don't get to treat each other and have those conversations at that aggressive level because escalation is a thing? You think we don't have enough emotional regulation with our type A personalities where we should kind of have a conversation to stave off, especially around election season? It was amazing to see some of the heated conversations in firehouses that then bled into calls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all a choice, and you've done a great job about bringing awareness to, you know, the fact that we don't want fun to leave the job. We don't want, because if you can have fun at your job and you can love what you do, then obviously it's going to ease things and you're going to enjoy it. So it's not going to beat you down as much. And it's really important. But we can also, again, I like to think about extremes and then find the middle. So you could also give yourself an excuse of like, oh, we're just a bunch of grown kids, or, you know, this is how we are, or this is what it means to be a firefighter. You can use that as an excuse too for maybe not behaving in a way that A, you would when you were starting to get on and you're trying to get an interview and show people why you deserve the job. You get a little bit more comfortable and sure that you're not going to lose what you have. Yes, we don't want to use it as an excuse for just acting and however we want, saying whatever we want, whenever we want. And then that would even go further with, yeah, the more senior you get on, then how you interact with newer people, right? You can give yourself a lot of excuses as to why that's okay when outside of the job, outside of the station, if you were interacting with someone, you would never talk to them that way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's weird how environment and hierarchy can change things. So maybe that's the filter. Maybe the filter is, would I say that if this person wasn't in a uniform and they weren't in this job and they are my quote unquote, the rookie or my rookie or our crew's rookie, would we talk to them like this? So there's a difference between, you know, mentoring and guiding and teaching and, you know, building bonds and camaraderie and joking around. There's a difference between that and, you know, you would never say these things or act this way to this exact person in front of you if you stepped out of the hall right now in your civilian clothes and you weren't working together. So, like, A, you have to try and maintain the professionalism that you said you were going to have when you got hired. And B, maybe that's a perspective of trying to see, okay, if we were in civilian clothes and we were outside of here and, you know, I wouldn't talk to someone in the public this way if I'm on a call or hopefully at the supermarket. So why am I talking to them like I am now just because we're in this hall and in this uniform and in this role? So yeah, it's about looking at things from different perspectives and changing your lens and see if that gives you a different opinion, I suppose.
You guys are so much more polite than we are up there. I'm going to use a phrase that you absolutely love. I say that facetiously. Kid calls are the worst. Tell me why you don't like that phrase and why you think it can be harmful when you say stuff like that.
Right. Yeah, so it's interesting when you talk about things more and more than you can, again, you can see it with different layers. So initially, you know, my thought was, well, I feel you're priming people's brains. We're priming our own brains. And again, this isn't because we're doing it malevolently. We're doing it with all good intention, that we're trying to prepare people and we don't want them to be harmed and hurt by what we do. So we're trying to protect them by telling them, okay, be prepared because of this. And, you know, if you have kids, it's even worse. And I think the more times we say that, the more we prime our brains to already be prepared that the call is going to be the worst. So when the call comes in and we hear it's pediatric, we're already ready for it to be the worst.
Hmm.
So I believe it's more likely to affect you. And then I thought it through, like, well, there's the flip side too, that if I'm go to this call and I'm not affected afterwards, I could also beat myself up and think, well, am I a monster? What's wrong with me? Why am I not affected when everyone's told me that these calls are the worst? So I think you're kind of screwed either way. So what I came to is, well, why don't we just take the calls as they come, no matter what they are? And realize that if we are sensitive to a call and it touches us in a certain way and we have to process that, then deal with that, whether it's the moment after or the day after or a year after, it doesn't matter. Whatever comes up, whatever however this rolls out, you need to face it. And then thinking about it further, I even thought, well, okay, kid calls are the worst. What age does that stop? So if we go to a call and the patient is 18, do we think, wow, if they were 17, this call would be the worst, but they're 18, so it's not. Right? So where is that 17, 16? Like we all of a sudden the call isn't a problem and it doesn't have to be processed and it didn't bother you at all because of the number. What age does that stop at? So it kind of, when you try and really look at things that are said and you try and pull them apart, which we, you know, that's kind of a superpower we have as firefighters. We love to like poke at things and carve opinions and ideas and phrases and try and show how they're not true. And we always love to do that. So we can do that to our benefit by being a critical thinker, right? That's being a critical thinker as opposed to just digesting something and assuming that's the way it is and moving forward. I think you can think about it in a different way. So again, it's not dismissing that those calls can be difficult. Of course they can, but there's times where they won't be. So why blanket statement them across the board and assume that they're all difficult when what you can do is then look at every call you'll ever go to, look at you, look at your life, look how you're affected, and then if you're bothered by something, deal with it. I think that's a healthier way to be than just, that's their advice to me, than specifying about how certain calls may be hard.
No, it's really true. Before I had kids, I did feel weird that all the guys who were a little older than me who had kids were affected by pediatric calls, and I'm sitting there, excuse me, not being affected, but people my grandparents' age, some of those social situations where maybe they were dying alone or in horrible shape because they couldn't afford their medications, those calls hit me over the head like a 10-pound hammer because that was something I could relate to. I was very close to my grandparents growing up, and I was not in any way, shape, or form as a young firefighter prepared for that, because that sounds low impact. So we're not being taught that you don't know what's going to tug at your mind and your heartstrings. It's just, you can't call what's going to affect you. And I love the concept of, listen, call it as it comes. Because that does give us the space to realize you never know what situation you're going to walk into, that it's going to hit you. So just be prepared for them all. And some might,
yeah, and
some
you can also
not.
Prime your brain. Yeah, you can prime your brain too for a positive. So I could say to myself, and I believe it's true, perhaps because I have children, I'm better suited to be helping kids on calls. Because I have a different level of experience of interacting with kids of all ages, where it may be a bit foreign to an 18-year-old, a 19-year-old that just got on the fire service. And if you are in that sandwich generation or time of your life where you have, you know, kids and you have aging parents, then you now have this experience of caring for, you know, elderly people in your life. So you can look at these things not as it's going to make you weak and more susceptible to damage. You can also see them as opportunities for, well, I've had more experience in these areas and I'll be able to better help these people because I understand them on an emotional level. So maybe we can use that priming your brain mentality in a positive way. And again, that's not going to eliminate being affected by calls. I'm just saying that perspective and thinking about it and seeing yourself and the people you're interacting with in that way, I believe there's a high possibility it could mitigate how harmful that may be to you. And you may be able to walk away, which I've talked about before, from difficult calls with some feeling of having done really good things for those people. And then you can carry that forward as opposed to just carrying the tragedy of it or the harshness of it or the injustice of it.
That actually dovetails perfectly into my next question, which is autopilot versus observer. Those calls where we feel like there's absolutely nothing we can do. Talk to me about your belief on that.
Yeah, so that was something I was taught, and again, with all good intention early on, especially doing peer support work is that, well, when you're in autopilot mode or in work mode, that you are not maybe taking in as many details or as much stimuli and information. So you aren't necessarily affected as deeply by it. But if you show up and it's immediately, obviously, fatality and there's nothing you can do, quote unquote, right? You're told there's nothing you can do, that you then switch off from that autopilot of trying to make things better into now you're just a bystander. You're there. And not only are you a bystander, but you're very, very close to the call, which most bystanders, you know, unless they were part of that before you showed up or, before they were put back behind the fire line, that they're not as close, up close and personal with it. And then you could think about if you're ever called back to, say, extricate somebody that it was a fatality from a car and we're just there to extricate them, or do a wash down and clean things up afterwards, then you're in more of observer mode too, because you're not in that autopilot, high speed, going through the motions of, not going through the motions, but, you know, in that professional helper way, that somehow is harder. But I think there is this gets to that emotional connection, and tied into that also was the idea of like, well, you need to put up a barrier between you and the people you help. You need to distance yourself. You need to buffer. There's always these phrases or words that we use to talk about how we could protect ourselves mentally from the effects of calls. But I think a lot of the problems that we see in our life, and we know that addictions are really rooted in this disconnection. What I'm trying to bring some light to through experience too, is I find if the more I tried to disconnect and shut off and maybe dehumanize people in calls, I found then, again, I'm only left with the heaviness or the tragedy or the messiness of the call, where I feel like if you can connect, and we can start with, you know, where there is something you can do, you can train yourself to connect more. And we even just talked about, you know, connecting with children on a different level because you have children, or connecting with elderly patients because you have elderly people in your life that you care for, and sort of translating that compassion. You can then translate that into, and again, this might be an energetic mentality of, if people have just passed on or about to pass on, or you showed up and they've already died, that there is still something to do, right? There is dignity, there is respect, there is comfort, there is your presence in that moment, whereas I would be thinking, you know, that I wouldn't want to be alone when I passed away. So now this person doesn't have to be alone because you're there, right? And if their loved ones can't be there for them in that moment, then you can. Mm. So again, there, it doesn't change the messiness of the call, but you can, because you showed up in that way, now that's the thing to do, right? This is the thing to do. There is still a lot to do, and there's maybe equally, or you can label it equally or more important things to do than operating tools, right? This is a very human thing we're talking about connection. And if we want to take it all the way back to when we got on the job, you said you wanted to help people, right? And I hope rooted in that wanting to help people is from an emotional, comforting, compassionate place. So here's your opportunity to put that into practice, right? Here's your opportunity to do that thing that you said that you wanted to do and you could do. And maybe that is uncomfortable for some people because it's not maybe the norm in our society. And even those, you talked about social media and the arguing, that comes a lot from disconnection because you're not face to face with the person. We also talk about road rage, being like you have a car between you and them, so you never talk to somebody like that if they're face to face. So that intimacy, that connection, that changes how we interact, right? So I think connection is really important. And we're not always able to do it to the nth degree because, again, we talked about fatigue and all these other layers that get in the way. But I guess what we're speaking about all the time on podcasts, like when we're having these conversations, is ideals. Okay, so here's the ideal. How do I try to get to that ideal as often as I can, when I can? And then I think that's the best you can do.
It's funny because I never would have known there were so many layers to this job when I first came on, and you hear us make, you know, firefighters and knuckle draggers jokes all the time, but dear Lord, just the minutiae and the layers to this job and the social responsibility we have to people. Like you said, I wouldn't want to pass away by myself. And well, you didn't. You're there. That firefighter is there. And it's a little mind numbing and awe-inspiring how much there is that actually mentally goes into this job. Not a knuckle-dragging job.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, I want to say a lot of people, you got to be careful with generalizing. I think there are some that leave a lot on the table when they retire, that there was a lot of opportunities to grow as a human being through the work. And that this is the adage you get in, you get out of it what you put into it, right? So you can do this job very simply. You can not consider the nuances and the minutiae. You can choose not to think about these things or try and integrate them or test yourself against them. You can choose to do that. You absolutely can. I've seen people do it. I still see people do it. That's a choice. That's fine. It could be said to be easier or harder. I don't know, because I haven't necessarily taken that path, so I don't know how that would be. I know it's been challenging to consider the minutiae and the nuances and deal with the messiness and, you know, measure myself against it. But it has helped hopefully form me into a better person, you know, year by year. So I don't think I would trade it for anything. As difficult as sometimes can be, it's also given a lot back. And I've said before that the job has given me more than it's ever taken away. And I think it's because of trying to, over these years, approach it in this regard, as opposed to, you know, the punch in, punch out, coldness, disconnection, see it as just a job, as opposed to seeing it as like a personal growth opportunity or seeing it as a core value of who I am. And they just pay me to put a uniform on and behave this way and, you know, behave the way I normally would, but I get paid for it. It's perspective and choice.
We have covered some heavy topics, so I do want to end this episode on a lighter note, and that was I didn't realize that Canadians called American firefighters cowboys.
Yeah, and I think it's disrespectful. That's what when I threw that down there, I think it's disrespectful to do that. But that's a lot about not understanding people, not understanding the why. I mean, it's assuming that every firefighter in the States is a cowboy and is reckless and doesn't think about what they're doing. They're unprofessional. And like, that's what you're saying, millions of people. And that's the way they think. I think it's I love to bring that up because I think it's incredibly disrespectful. And there's a real opportunity to learn there about, well, why? That seems cowboyish. And I've heard it said, and I've learned from that too, of like, well, you know, you're just looking at something and thinking it's dangerous because you can't do it. But if you could do that thing, you could do it the way they're doing it, and you can do it competently and professionally, and you can, that's safe. That's safe, right? That's the safest way to be in the job. That's another thing we've learned too, is to be good. So the better you are, the more aggressive you can be, and it's actually safe and it's more effective, you know, and it's rooted in science. So I think it's very dismissive. And I think it's definitely a way for people that aren't American firefighters to dismiss things and not have to pay attention to the why behind everything and actually learn and maybe, again, measure themselves against it and go, oh, maybe I should buck up a little bit or humble myself a little bit to this and actually learn about what it's all about, and maybe I'll benefit and the people I'm going to help benefit too. So, yeah, stop calling things that you see and ignorantly assume as reckless and ignorant. Stop assuming that that's cowboy shit, and maybe, you know, take a pause and pay attention and ask why.
So joke's on you guys up north, because I guarantee if you called a firefighter a cowboy, most of them would probably be complimented down here. So I think that's the difference.
For sure. Yeah, I take it as a compliment too. Again, that's just mentality, right? Like, damn right.
Well, Scott, thank you so much for having this conversation with me, especially after both of us came off shift and, you know, had maybe two brain cells between us, or three in your part. But
that's awesome. I'm glad we're able to talk. And yeah, I really appreciated the episode that you did with me. And I hope it's just the start of us having more conversations in the future.
Oh, I love it. And thank you so much for what you guys do with the culture you create with your project and your team, and just making us think outside of our mental box a little more and stretch our imaginations and grow. So thank you.
Awesome. I appreciate it. That means a lot.